You're listening to Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Are you one of those hand sanitizer junkies? You know, the type you can't go anywhere in public with that little bottle of clear alcohol gel. You touch a shopping cart, you hang on to a subway pole, you turn a doorknob. Better decontaminate, and fast. But what if all that antibacterial hand-wringing was actually making you more likely to get sick? Could you be scrubbing away good bacteria that might be helping to keep you safe? Rob Dunn is author of The Wildlife of Our Bodies, Predators, Parasites, and Partners That Shape Who We Are. He writes about how natural it is for our bodies to be covered with microbes. We did, after all, evolve in a world crawling with creatures. You got your bacteria, parasites, and worms. Could they be serving some purpose, a useful purpose, in our bodies? Joining me now is Rob Dunn, Associate Professor in the Department of Biology at North Carolina State University in Raleigh. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks so much, Ira. It's great to be here. What a great heart show. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Let's talk about your book. Your book is more than just about the bacteria that live on us, right? It's really about how we evolve with creatures around us. I mentioned the worms, but you have cows, predators, and things like that.
Yeah, so I'm a community ecologist by training, so I study how organisms interact with each other, and I've become really interested in humans and all of the other species we interact with, and how they've changed through time and what that means for how we are and really who we are in some really fundamental sorts of ways.
Mm-hmm. And so is it a mistake to use that hand washer, those alcohol gels?
So it is. So the alcohol gels are okay. They don't appear to do a whole lot, but they're not necessarily bad. But a lot of what we use is actually antimicrobial or antibacterial, and it has triclosan in it. And there have been a couple of really good studies recently comparing households who use just normal soap to those that use the soap with triclosan in it. And it turns out that about 75% of us use at least some antimicrobial substance in our house, whether it's a wipe or a soap, or it's actually really common in detergents. And when you compare head-to-head those households, the households that use just normal soap are about the same in terms of health as the households who use the antibacterial or antibiotic soap. And for those individuals in one recent study who were chronically diseased before the study, so they had asthma or diabetes, I mean, very, very common chronic diseases, when they used the antibiotic soaps, they were actually more likely to get sick than if they didn't use any soap at all. And so there's something really fundamental that these soaps are potentially doing to us, and it relates to the good life we have on our skin.
So there is good stuff that we're killing with these antimicrobial soaps and gels.
Yeah, so what we think that normal soap does is that when you're washing your hands, it tends to kill what's recently arrived. And so if you just shook the hand of somebody who had E. coli on their hand, or you just touched something, or you just wiped in the bathroom, it's scrubbing off those recent arrivals, but largely leaving intact the many, many bacteria that would be on your hand normally, and that are providing a benefit, a kind of first line of defense. It's not actually well documented that that's what's going on, but that's the sort of generally held belief of how soaps work. But when you're using these antibiotic soaps, they're having a slightly different effect, because what they're doing is they're favoring a subset of species that are tough enough to deal with that antibiotic compound. And there are actually some bacteria that now appear to eat the antibiotic compound in those soaps and wipes if they have carbon, which is pretty easy to get pretty much anywhere you are. And so the antibacterial soaps are really pretty fundamentally different, and we use them all the time without thinking much about what they're doing.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking with Rob Dunn, author of The Wildlife, or The Wildlife, which whatever you'd like to pronounce. It's two words in your book. The Wildlife of Our Bodies, Predators, Parasites, and Partners That Shape Who We Are Today. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. You can tweet us at SciFry, S-C-I-F-R-I. Go to our Facebook page sci/SciFry on Facebook. There's so much to talk about in your book. Let's move on to Crohn's disease. It can be a debilitating disease that's very common in developed countries. And you talk about some unusual methods to treat it that we might not think about.
Yeah, so there's more and more evidence of a geographical association between the places where people get Crohn's disease and where we've removed worms from our systems. And so historically, most humans would have had multiple species of worms.
Do you mean like fishing worms or different kinds of worms that would be in our gut?
Worms, tapeworms, hookworms, round worms. It was a zoo in our guts. And very recently, really in the last 50 years in most places, we've started to pretty comprehensively rid ourselves of worms in some places, but not all parts of the world. And so it's in those places that autoimmune diseases like Crohn's disease have started to become more common, and allergies. A number of people have begun to argue that maybe these are causally associated. And so one of the first things that was done was a guy by the name of Joel Weinstock at Tufts did an experiment where he actually gave Crohn's patients whipworms and was able to show that the patients given whipworms that had Crohn's actually saw remission in most of the symptoms of Crohn's. And so there's one interesting piece of evidence that maybe there is some relationship between the worms and Crohn's. And then there are other studies coming up. There's some really good studies in mice, and then a study in Gabon in West Africa showing that if children have a whole bunch of worms, which is really common, and then you get rid of those worms, and then you have a control group in which you don't get rid of the worms, the children that you've ridded of the worms are then much more likely to have allergies. And so there's this growing sense of this link between the presence of worms and what our immune system is doing, and this sort of broad sense that in the absence of worms, our immune system can be kind of overreactive.
Wow. So are there any studies to test out this theory that if you have people with Crohn's syndrome, let's give them some worms and see how they improve?
Yeah, there's a good study of folks in Iowa, and those individuals that were given worms in Gatorade, worm eggs in Gatorade, and actually got much better, and all but one individual in that case who had Crohn's got better. And there are now a couple of groups in Mexico that are clinically giving people with Crohn's worms. And so you can go to Mexico if you have Crohn's and get a worm treatment. But I think one of the interesting things related to this is that, like, lots of what's going on between our body and other species, it's still really a brave new world. And so we understand that these relationships that take the worms away and some bad things seem to happen, put them back, and you seem to restore some benefits. But exactly what's going on is wide open. And so for me personally, as somebody who's interested in these interactions between species, it's really amazing that something so fundamental to who we are and so intimate could still be so poorly understood.
Yes, it is. Let's go to the phones. Bob in Cleveland. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Well, let me just make this quick. I work in the health field, and I've always heard stories, folklore, about their Crohn's. So to hear it actually stated by an author is great. And that was my question to it. But I have another question, and it's real quick. When I was growing up, you know, back in the 60s, you know, there used to be like open sewers and stuff. And we used to, as kids, we used to love to explore the sewer system, you know, going in sewer tunnels where there was open sewage. Now, I think back and, you know, we walked in our shoes and then we'd go in the house with the shoes. And I was thinking, you know, and I also read this when I was being educated in the health field about the Western societies we have so much autoimmune diseases because at a young age we're not exposed to bacteria. We don't give our systems we don't allow them to build like a muscle. And I was wondering, what do you think about that? Should kids be exposed to, instead of mothers washing vegetables and using all these antibacterial stuff, is it better for them to be exposed to germs and bacteria?
That's
my question.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, so it's a fascinating question, Bob. So, I mean, I think that on some level, there's a lot of evidence that kids who are more exposed to more kinds of either good bacteria or sort of at least harmless bacteria do see some benefits. And then the worm story is sort of separate in as much as most of the worms have some cost to us, but often it's not a huge cost. In the case of worms, I think ideally we'd either like to domesticate some of these worms so they have no cost and use them or identify the chemical compound. Mm.
Let's go to Laurie in Dublin, California. Hi, Laurie.
Hello. How are you?
How are you?
Great, thanks. I just want to say I've been a wastewater professional, a.k.a. a sewage treatment plant operator for many, many years. I never use antibacterial soaps. I use regular bar soaps, even at work. I keep my nails short. I just use good hand-washing techniques. I don't use antibacterials at home. And everything that the author is saying substantiates what I know. I mean, of all people, you think that I would use antibacterials, but I'm not for them at all.
There you go. There's a testimonial for soap.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. I mean, soap is this miraculous thing. So, I mean, if you compare populations that use and don't use soap, using soap can reduce, really common colds and flus and bacterial infections by 20 to 40%. And so it's a big deal, and it's so simple. And we seem so eager to be hygienic, but the truth is about 50% of people don't regularly wash their hands with soap. And so rather than using all this antibacterial stuff, just wash your hands.
There you go.
Simple, easy.
Tell us about your belly button biodiversity project. Wow.
So we've been fascinated by trying to figure out what's living on this. And this project really started just very small, but it's kind of caught on. And what we want to do, a lot of the time when we study the microbes in our body, we do it in a really intensive way. We pick 5 people and we study them very much in depth. But we don't have a good sense, like if you look geographically or among populations, how people vary in the species that live on them. And so we've started sampling people from all over and sampling their belly buttons. We just take a swab the belly button, and then we grow the microbes from the belly button out on agar. But the truth is that most of the species that you find in your belly button, Ira, or anybody else finds, we don't know what they eat. And so the only way we can see those is by looking at them genetically. And so in doing that, I mean, just in the first 90 people we've looked at in terms of which species are present, we've found 1,400 species of bacteria, 600 of which don't match up with species we know so far. And so it's like the rainforest in there. It's really this incredible thing. And I love it because once somebody knows what species live on them, they have to think about that life in a really different way. I mean, I found out that I have this rare species in my belly button. It's only known from soybeans and silk moths and me. And that's sort of inescapable knowledge. And so now I have to think, well, what do I do about this? What is it doing? Which I think is societally a really good place to go.
So could anybody get their belly button swabbed or become part of the study?
So if you go to our website at yourwildlife.org, you can then click on the belly button site and see how to get involved. And we're really excited to learn about your navel.
Oh, so many things I could say. I'm talking with Rob Dunn, author of The Wildlife of Our Bodies, Predators, Parasites, and Partners That Shape Who We Are Today on Science Friday from NPR. 1-800-989-8255. If that's just in our belly buttons, then there must be colonies all over our bodies in other places.
Yeah, so the truth is that no single individual human has ever been sampled comprehensively for all the microbes on their body. It's never been done. I'm actually out right now. I'm doing a show for the Discovery Channel about Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs, and we're going to try to sample him comprehensively, see what he has. But all the evidence points to there being thousands of species of bacteria on the average human body.
So we can decode the human genome, but we don't know what's growing on your skin, basically.
No, that's right. And more of your genetic diversity. So if we sequenced you, Ira, and all of the genes on you.
I'm going to volunteer for that sequence.
Excellent. so far more of the genes on you are microbial or fungal or viral than are human. And on the one hand, you think, well, why does that matter? But the truth is that also includes genes for doing things that are ecologically important, as it were. And so, for example, in your gut, helping you to digest things, producing useful vitamins, defending your skin. And so those genes are really coding for useful things. And so you think of yourself, we all think of ourselves as human, but the truth is we're this interesting symbiosis in which we've really ignored most of the partners.
Yeah, and would these do we pass these from one to another, do you think, or we just pick them off of surfaces?
So for sure, I mean, contagious diseases would be one example of things we know we pass. And then there are things like H. pylori, which we also know ways in which it's passed, which can cause ulcers in your gut. But in terms of the good bacteria, we understand much less about them. And I think part of the issue is that when we look at our own bodies, we tend to approach them from a medical perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when they're broken, we say, how do we fix them? How do we repair the heart? But I think when it comes to these other species, we also need to approach them from an ecological or evolutionary perspective. Mm-hmm. How did they get the way they are, and what does that mean about the ways they are likely to break?
Mm-hmm. One last question before we run out of time. I want to get this in here because in your book you talk about our appendix, and we all think that our appendix is useless, but we should rethink that?
Yeah, I mean, the appendix amazes me because we've all thought it's useless and it just hangs there. It's an organ. We seem comfortable with the idea we have a useless organ. But Bill Parker and Randall Bollinger at Duke have started to look into this. And long story much shorter, it's now looking increasingly like the main role of the appendix is actually as kind of a nature reserve for a good bacteria. It's, in fact, filled with films of the bacteria that benefit us in our guts. And it's also filled with a really common antibody in our gut, the most common one, IgA. And one of the main things IgA now does, and well, it's always done, but it's been recently figured out that it does, is it helps those bacteria to form the links between themselves to keep from washing away. And so the amazing thing, I think, is our conscious brain is saying, kill the bacteria, and our subconscious immune system is saying, hold on to them, keep them. But so the idea that Parker and Bollinger have is that when you get some severe infectious disease in your gut and your intestines that might wipe out your native bacteria, that the appendix then serves as a place to from which to recolonize your gut. And much in the way that if you clear a forest and turn it to agriculture, well, where do the new seeds come from? Well, they come from the nature reserve next to the agricultural site. And so that's what they think the appendix is, this sort of climax forest of our bodies. And they could still be wrong, but there have been no papers criticizing their ideas, and the ideas are at least plausible given what the observations are. And so I think it's just really fascinating that you and I could all have an organ that people are just beginning to understand.
Rethinking that. Rob, thank you for taking time to join us. Your book is fascinating, The Wildlife of Our Bodies, Predators, Parasites, and Partners That Shape Who We Are Today. Thanks again, and have a good weekend.
Oh, thanks so much, Ira, to you and your microbes.
Me too. I'll thank them for you.
All right.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about, bananas. Bananas. Yes, we do have bananas, but for how long? Stay with us. We'll find out more.